Hi, and welcome to the College Financial Lady podcast. I'm Anne Garcia, a fee-only financial advisor and author of the College Financial Lady blog. My guest today is John McMichael. John's a guidance counselor at Cherokee High School in New Jersey. He's currently in his 17th year of helping Cherokee students navigate the path from high school to college, and he's also the testing coordinator with responsibilities for standardized testing, state testing, and AP testing. Given the breadth of John's responsibilities, there's so much we could talk about, but today we're going to focus on student loans. That's because John's own educational path, he's a graduate of Villanova University with a bachelor's degree in psychology, and then he continued his studies at Temple, where he earned a Master of Education with distinction in counseling psychology, left him with quite a bit of his own student debt. This debt has informed his own adult life, the guidance he gives to students, and how he thinks about college for his own children. John, welcome.
Thank you so much, Anne. I'm very happy to be here today.
It's great to have you here. So tell me a little bit about your own college decision. You know, how did you pick a college? What role did cost play in that decision? How much did you borrow? You know, what types of loans? Were they federal? Were they private? Were they something else?
Sure. Well, I would say, you know, it was kind of predestined that I would go to college. It was very important to my parents, especially for my mother. She was an immigrant from the Philippines and had attempted to go to college and never finished. So it was always, you know, you're going to college. As far as the search goes, you know, junior year and senior year, I visited the campuses, as is, you know, traditional for a lot of students. And my dad and I would go all over the place, go on the tours. And, you know, to make a very long story short, I remember coming home one day in the spring and our dining room table, which we only used for, you know, Christmas and Easter, had my acceptance letters laid out. You know, obviously this is pre-internet and email and all that sort of thing. So I see these letters laid out on the table and my dad just says, pick one. I'm like, okay. So we're going to pick a college. I had visited most, if not all of them. I'd seen them in person and, you know, talked to my counselor in my school and that sort of thing. As far as finances go, and you know, it's really in retrospect, it's kind of a shame, and certainly a lot I would do differently, but it wasn't part of the conversation. My parents taught my sister and I about money in terms of, you know, getting a job and working and having your own spending money, but when it came to college, we didn't have those conversations. And I meant to look it up for you. I can give you an overall number for undergrad and grad school. I probably will in the podcast today, but, for undergrad, it was literally just looking at acceptance letters. It wasn't looking at SARs or anything like that. It was just pick one. So I didn't know, and I haven't looked up how much of my debt, how much of the portion was from undergrad. But you know, I guess it was one of those, and it kind of breaks my heart to hear it now, although I get the sentiment, but it was kind of one of those, like, we'll figure it out. You pick where you want and we'll make it work. So that's kind of, you know, obviously, like I said, in a nutshell, but that's kind of how it went for me.
Yeah. And so you graduated from undergrad with some student loans. Were those, federal or private or?
They were federal as far as I can remember.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing I can say. We never went into the private route, which, you know, you hear a lot of horror stories about folks going that way.
Yeah.
And there are some benefits in terms of, you know, we'll probably talk about the interest rate at some point today. So back then.
Yeah. So what are your interest rates?
Yeah. So amazingly, when I finished, I went right from undergrad 4 years to 2 years of grad school full time. So when I got done with that, I consolidated. And at the time, I swear to you, it was under 2%, mm-hmm. Which was amazing at the time. But then I wanted to try to do public service loan forgiveness, so I had to get into the direct program. And now I think it's 2.2 or 2.25, so which is still, I recognize, you know, a lot of people would probably be drooling at that kind of an interest rate for anything, let alone student loans. So I believe it's right around 2.2 something.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, when you consolidate, you get your average interest rate plus a fractional amount. So, So it's fortunate for you that you were able to borrow at such low rates. I mean, cause I talk to people all the time, whose student loans have 8% interest rate and the federal government doesn't allow you to refinance within the federal program to get a better interest rate. So,
right.
you know, you're stuck with the interest rate that, you know, with the prevailing interest rate when you took out the loan.
Yeah. I will tell you, I don't know if this is the right part to throw it in, but I shared this with my students. You know, I was 24 years old, so graduated college at 22, grad school, like I said, 2 years full time. And I started at Cherokee. Very luckily, I got a job right out of grad school. And it was just under $70,000 total.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of that was just the interest that had accrued while you were in school.
Correct. Because some of the loans were unsubsidized. So that interest was going.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's something that people often overlook. And I've even seen this happen with, with clients who are working full time and have student loans from undergrad, and they might do an executive MBA program where they're going to school nights or weekends or something like that, and they're still working. And unbeknownst to them, their undergrad student loans get put in deferment because they're enrolled in a college somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, unbelievable.
And
yeah.
Suddenly they're like, wait a minute, I haven't made this payment in like 4 months.
Yeah, oh man.
And it's bigger now.
Yeah, sure. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So you went straight to grad school. So you basically were in college for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stuck within the federal loans for undergrad, then your grad school loans are the bigger part of all of this, I imagine.
Yeah, I want to say it was, let's say it was 50-20. You know, like 20,000 from undergrad,
yeah.
Which at the time wasn't probably too bad. You know, in graduating college in 2002, that was probably slightly above average. You might know better than me, but you know, that wasn't too bad. But then going to grad school, which I took on myself. And again, there's things I could have done differently there. In terms of, I had a graduate assistantship, but it would have been better to get a TA position, which would have included free tuition. But you know, hindsight's 20/20, as they say, right?
Right, right. Well, and you know, one of the challenges for young people right now is that so many jobs require graduate degrees, and we've increased the degree requirements for so many paths. You know, looking at the healthcare field, you know, pharmacists need PharmDs, and physical mm-hmm. therapists need doctorates, and nurses right. need BSNs, and we're not providing any more support for people getting those degrees, and the salaries for those positions haven't necessarily changed, but we're certainly asking people to take on a lot more education and cost of education to get there.
Right. And you know, to be honest with you, the undergrad, which I said, you know, let's just say it was 20,000, that would have been higher. But in January of my senior year of high school, my mother unexpectedly passed away. So we went from a two parent income situation to one. So I vaguely, you know, have recollection of my dad calling the financial aid office and saying, you know, we need to adjust the FAFSA and all that sort of thing. So I'm sure my debt burden probably would have been higher.
Yeah. Yeah. So I talk to a lot of families who struggle with getting their student to understand the impact that student loans would have on their adult or their post-college life. You know, they're seeing, oh, look at this lovely four-year opportunity, these ivy-colored covered hallway buildings.
Yeah. And, sure.
So, you know, did you think about borrowing for college at the time? And I mean, I know this issue has far more awareness now than it did 15-20 years ago when you were thinking of college and then thinking of grad school. But when you think of your 18-year-old self, was there something someone could have said at the time that would have caused you to pursue a different college path?
Oh man, I would love to say yes.
Around enough 16, 17, 18-year-olds.
Yeah, I just don't know, because that message, like I told you earlier, at least I can only speak for myself, right? So my parents had this, you know, we'll make it work, we'll make it work, and we'll make it work. So I really, unfortunately, you know, and I bear some of that, you know, responsibility as well, like, because yeah, okay, you're 16, 17, 18, you are in some sense a kid, but you are also an adult, right? I didn't ask those questions. I didn't have an awareness. It wasn't part of my consciousness. And to answer your question, Ann, I really just don't even know if there anybody could have gotten through to me, and what would it have taken? You know, I sometimes kind of wish if I had the DeLorean and go back and talk to myself, maybe that would be the only person that could do it. Be like, listen, it's me. You know, I can tell you what it's like to live with this, you know, 10, 20 years down the road. But now I don't know if there's somebody that could have grabbed me and got through to me. I don't think so.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned living with this 10, 20 years down the road. Tell me about your post-college loan experience. So you mentioned you owed about $70,000 when you graduated. And then you're doing public service loan forgiveness?
Well, I tried to. And I, you know, well, so first of all, if you can't be in the extended payment plan, which I'm in, the 30-year payment plan. So, you know, my options were standard, which I don't know, Anne, maybe I'm not understanding it right, but I believe it says you pay it off in 10 years, which there's nothing left to forgive if I pay it off in 10 years, right? And then it was an income-based repayment. But at the time when I was looking into this, you know, my wife and I had been in education a while, and, you know, we were making too much where it wouldn't make sense. My payments would have been, you know, very high, much higher than they are now. Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense for us.
Yeah.
So I'm just in the, you know, extended 30-year repayment plan. So I think if I have my numbers right, my daughter, who's 11, will be 2 years out of college and I'll finish paying mine off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how much do you know how much you owe now?
I think it's 29,000, if I'm not mistaken.
So over the course of about 15 years, you've paid off about half of your
half of your
student loans, which is just nuts.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
So talk to me about how that's, you know, how that's impacted your post-college life. You know, you mentioned that your daughter will be 2 years out of college when you've paid off your loans. So how's this going to play into her, you know, her college funding? Are you able to save for that? Are you able to save for your own retirement? Sure. When it came to buying a home, are you a homeowner?
Yes. So, let's see here. So maybe if we go back, so before I even had kids, got married, again, I'm 24, I'm starting here. I think my first salary was $44,000. So, you know, it's been there ever since then. Right. And I luckily have, you know, the auto withdrawal, so I don't even have to do anything. We literally set it and forget it. And the government just takes that money every month. It's something that's just always there, right? I don't even know something. It's like your cell phone, I guess. I mean, it's just something I've always had in my entire adult life. So yes, my wife and I, when we got married, we had a townhouse that was supposed to be our starter house. We ended up there for 7 years, which was not the plan. I have a daughter who's 11 and a son who's 9. You know, I just read your post about the 529 plans, and we do have 529s for them. I'm sorry to tell you, we are not maxing our retirement, but we also have pensions. We're both public school educators, so New Jersey does still have the pension system. We do have 403Bs, so we really try to be responsible with our finances. You know, we have a mortgage, but we don't carry credit card debt. Where one car is paid off, the other one's close to it. So we try to be responsible, but it's always there. It's, you know, $400 a month. That's just automatic. You know, I share this with my students constantly. Like, you know, like you asked me a couple minutes ago, is there somebody who could have talked to me at 17 or 18? I try to be that voice to my students now and say, like, it's $400 a month. Like, I tell them that exact number, because that's exactly what it is. You know, that amount of money comes out of my bank account every month. And, you know, sometimes I get raised eyebrows or like, oh my goodness. You know, sometimes they're just like, I don't know, it just goes over their head. But, you know, I try to reach them and make it real and say, this is something. And it's been that way for years, and it's going to be that way. I have a picture of my kids on my desk, and I point to them and I say, you know, they're going to be in their early 20s. And that's still going to be the case between now and then. So it does. It impacts my personal life. It impacts my professional life. I try not to, and I hope that today in the podcast it doesn't come across that I am, you know, complaining or whining. Like, I live with the choices I make.
No, not at all. But I think it's really helpful for people to hear what it means to, you know, to be a professional in their career and, you know, established and successful where you are, a parent, you know, a contributing member of your community, and to have very limited discretionary spending because of the steps you took to prepare yourself for your career.
Yes. And you said earlier, and I meant to chime in, you know, so many fields require, you know, advanced degrees. So in the state of New Jersey, I'm not sure, you know, other states, but here in New Jersey, you must have a master's degree in counseling or a related field to become a high school counselor. So I knew that, you know, I knew mm-hmm. this was the goal, but unfortunately I just didn't think about, you know, how I was going to pay for it. And yeah, hindsight's 20/20, and you know, depending on how much time you have, you know, I can tell you all the things, like, cause I thought about it for years now, like, oh man, if I could go back, I would do this, this, and this, that would be different.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Well, so, you know, one of the things that jumps out, and if there was somebody at 16, 17, 18 that pulled me aside and really pushed it, I probably would have gone to the Naval Academy or tried to do Naval ROTC. I had the old paper, you know, again, pre-internet, I had the old paper application and brochures in my hand. It was like a college fair type situation I remember being at. And I really thought about it. One of my best friends did actually go to the Naval Academy and graduated from the Naval Academy. And, you know, my grandfather served in the Navy, but nobody was really nobody was discouraging me. Nobody was trying to talk me out of it. But, you know, I never served our country, and I think that would have been a really honorable thing to do. And, you know, having it paid for and becoming an officer, you know, that's one of the first things that comes to mind. And then as far as graduate school, you know, in my line of work, I think, well, I already said I could have been a TA, which would have been better than the graduate assistantship I had, because it would have been tuition remission. The other option would have been maybe I could have worked full time after college in admissions as an admissions counselor, which I think would have been a really great experience for me to have in my current role. And then maybe I could have done the master's for free as an employee of a university. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple, you know, we all have, if we had second chances, right? So there's a couple things I would have done differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, as we were saying before, this topic has a whole lot more visibility today. And so, you know, pointing out to students that they have a range of options, that, you know, they don't necessarily just have to go straight from college to high school to college to grad school, that there may be some other considerations or some paths to think of.
Sure. Well, I'm a huge proponent of community college. Mm-hmm. You know, our local two-year community college is fantastic. And I tell students, you know, all the time, like, you know, unless you're, you know, a stud athlete, Division I potential full ride, or a similar academic student where you might qualify for, you know, that level of academic support, merit aid, you know, short of that, you can't beat it, right? I mean, you literally can't. Even if you compare apples to apples, let's say commute to a local four-year college versus, you know, our community college, which doesn't have a dorm, so we try to make it a fair comparison, you're still, you know, less than half, right? So I try to, you know, support our local community college as a viable option for a lot of our students as well.
Yeah. Well, and especially with so many free community college programs out there and dual enrollment and things like that, there are a lot of good ways to incorporate community college into a four-year college experience. I know here in Oregon, all of our four-year schools have a relationship with a local community college where, you know, as you can even go away to college and live in the dorm on campus at the four-year school, but take all your classes at the community college for your first 2 years, and your credits transfer over, and, you know, and then you finish, and that's a degree from University of Oregon or Oregon State or Western Oregon, the same as everyone who went there for 4 years.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's really neat.
So, you know, and I think around the country, there are all kinds of, you know, all kinds of programs like that, that give students lots of opportunities to, you know, to pursue different, you know, different paths to a degree that'll leave them with a lot less debt. You know, I was reading a statistic somewhere, you know, to your point that $400 a month goes out of your checking account and, you know, and back to the, you know, back to the government. There's some, what is it like $75 billion a year is how much is getting paid in student loan debt. So that's all money that's not going into the economy in a productive capacity.
Sure. Yes.
And when you think of our country as a consumer economy, and we're taking that much consumer spending out of the economy. Now, not to say that all of it would go to good things.
But... yeah. More stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure, you know, we've all seen the stats, and there's that Twitter account with the student loan debt. It's, you know, more than credit card debt, right? I do agree with something you said a couple times today, where I do feel, even just in my 17 years as a counselor, my students are, and certainly more than me, you know, my students are more aware. I really saw that kind of jump up after the recession, you know, 2008, 9, 10, like in that time frame. That really kind of, I mean, a lot of people unfortunately lost a lot of savings. And you know, I think it's just more of a general awareness. And I think that continuing to say that this doesn't need to be a stigmatized topic, you know. Another part of my job is mental health. So, like, you know, that's another area where we try to take away stigma and say it's normal to talk about this, right? So similarly with finances, with college, like, let's have a conversation about it. Or have you spoken to your parents about it yet? You know, it's hopefully just going to become more and more of a normalized topic.
Yeah. And I always try to coach parents to think of why they want their child to go to college, not what college they want their child to go to.
And
you want that educational experience, you want that opening of doors, you want the career opportunities, but you also want things like being able to study abroad, or, you know, participate in Greek life, or all those things that mean you need to choose a school that you can afford to go to.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm very lucky to work in a, you know, pretty high achieving public school, and my district is great, where, you know, at my school, it's over 90% of grads, of seniors every year move on to some form of post-secondary education. I'd say of that 90%, it's, you know, 60% go right to a 4-year college, and the rest go to our local community college. So, you know, there is a big emphasis here on continuing your education in college. But sometimes I wish, like you said, you know, do we know why we're doing this? Are we thinking about it thoroughly? You know, I don't want kids to kind of go blindly because it's just the next step. And then, you know, we all, you and I, I'm sure, both know that the worst thing in the world is to go to college, take on debt, and then not have the degree and the job opportunities that come with it. So that's, like, you know, the worst situation.
Yeah, it's the worst of both worlds.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because the thing is, you know, if you look at the economics of an undergraduate education, if taking out the federal direct student loan every year is what makes the difference between going to college and not going to college, then that's a reasonable, you know, that's a reasonable choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to cost a person about $325 a month for 10 years. And if that's the difference between having a college degree and not having a college degree, when you look at all the other economic benefits of attending college, you know, higher salaries, lower unemployment, higher lifetime earnings, even excluding, you know, the 4 years that you were in college, you know, all of those are reasonable, those are reasonable choices. But when you take that $27,000 and then go on to grad school and add additional loans and interest accrued and on top of it, then it really starts to tilt the scale.
Yes. But I don't know if it's this simple, but is it just, you know, folks educating themselves, right? You know, we all, I guess when we're working with young people or we have young people in our lives, you know, you research the college. Oh, the campus is pretty or not, or does it have my major or not? And then it's like we get to the finances, and like, you know, you and I were talking before we recorded today about all these articles that are proliferating right now at the, you know, middle of May, when like, shouldn't these be like, you know, blasting like a siren in August or September, you know? So I think, you know, maybe just more awareness, more education, you know, podcasts like yours where folks can educate themselves so that you realize like, you know, these are conversations that like need to be had.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, question for you on being a student loan borrower. You mentioned that you bought a townhouse and you stayed in there longer than you wanted. Tell me about the experience of taking out a mortgage when you have student loans.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily, we were able to, I mean, again, this is all around the, the economic, you know, crash of 2008, 2009 is when we bought at like the height, like right before. So we bought this townhouse and.
Oh, when everyone was lending money to everyone.
Sure. Right. Yeah. You can just buy whatever you want. I mean, we didn't buy two over our heads, but then, you know, the market crashes. So that's part of why we can't sell, because we lose a ton. By the time the 7 years had finished, we kind of broke even. I mean, maybe we should have just gotten an apartment and rented for that time. You know, everybody tells you, oh, well, that's you're just giving money away. There's no equity there in an apartment. So we bought a house. And then, you know, we actually, funny enough, we bought the home my wife grew up in from her parents when they were looking to downsize. You know, they were empty nesters and wanted to move to a retirement community. You know, I would say so we've gone through the process twice, and, you know, your life is laid bare, right? You know, everything is on the table, and all the credit checks and all that, you know, you're signing your life. You're literally signing your life away. It feels like you're signing every piece of paper in a giant mountain of it. I would say that I didn't get any sense that my loans were prohibitive in terms of buying a home. I think that because we try to be responsible with our finances, our FICO scores, you know, our credit ratings are all pretty good. So we were able to qualify. So I do consider.
Well, that's one of the good things about having student loans is they do help. As long as you're making the payments, they do help your credit scores.
Right, right. And so, you know, again, my wife and I, so she's actually a teacher in the same, a different school, but the same district as mine. So, you know, we do have job security that most people, you know, can't, that they don't have. We have tenure here. So, you know, obviously still have to come up with down payments and all that sort of thing and qualify. But, you know, we do try to live responsibly. So, you know, we have been able to do that. And make the mortgage payments and all of that. I mean, I would say, again, you know, we talked earlier about your most recent podcast with about 529s. And, you know, we're not maxing retirement, which is something I would love to be able to do. And, you know, I'm sure we're not putting nearly enough in the 529s for my children to be, you know, set with their four-year college plans, if that's what they both choose to do. But, you know, so I don't know if this is a good time to transition, but as a parent, you know, I kind of want to have more frank. I actually, to be honest with you, I already do have very honest conversations with my kids. You know, we'll watch Villanova basketball games. You know, they won the national title in 2016 and 2018. So my daughter, I took her to visit the campus one day. We were in the area and we just walked around. And so she kind of, you know, she has Villanova clothes and she says like, Daddy, I'm going to go to Villanova. And I say, I don't know. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to afford it. So, you know, I kind of just say that it doesn't really go much further than that, but I kind of want that message to get across to her and to my son that, you know, we're going to have these conversations about, you know, what is realistic for us, you know, us, meaning what's realistic for you in terms of, you know, what's a tolerable level of debt to graduate with? You know, you said earlier about, you know, 300 a month for 10 years, you know, that's probably doable for the economic benefit of a college education, you know? So what is it, you know, what's going to be worth it for them and tolerable for them. And then, you know, if we're able to help, you know, I don't want to sacrifice my retirement. You know, my wife and I, you know, we've already kind of agreed on that. And, you know, luckily there are plenty of great options if you're realistic, right? And you're educated. We talked earlier about, you know, educating yourselves when you either work with teenagers or you have teenagers, to learn about all of this and to not just kind of do it, you know, do as I say, not as I do, right? Don't just say, oh, we'll figure it out, or we'll, you know, we're talking about what, $200,000 to $300,000 potentially for, for a student to get a four-year education, depending on a lot of factors. But that's...
Well, it's funny you mentioned the, you know, you mentioned going to Villanova and having all the jerseys and stuff for your kids. I was cleaning out my kids' closet the other day and I realized we had Cal and Michigan stuff up to about size 10 for both of them, like everything, you know, the football jerseys, the cheerleader outfits, the t-shirts, sweatshirts, you name it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's funny that it stopped at size 10. And I realized that was right around when we realized there was not a snowball's chance in hell that we were going to send either kid to either of our schools.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It hits you, right? Yeah. My daughter's 11. So maybe it's right around that same time.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that was, like I said, that was the point where we stopped talking about how great it would be for them to be at Berkeley or Michigan and how great it would be for them to go to college.
Right.
And so my husband actually picked up, you know, we're in Portland, so we have, you know, Nike and Adidas headquarters and employee stores here. So my husband went out and bought, Adidas made this t-shirt that just said college.
Okay. And
so he got in every color.
Oh, that's perfect. That's so funny. Yeah. You know, in New Jersey, it's, hey, how about Rutgers or, you know, the College of New Jersey, which is a fantastic option. So yeah, that the in-state's looking great. Right. We'll see.
Yeah. So, you know, adulting has its pros and cons, but, you know, some of the people who are best at adulting are the ones like you who are effective in communicating lessons learned in ways that let the next generation benefit from their experience. So in your current role as a, you know, as a high school counselor, you have the opportunity to encourage students to consider the financial impact of college choices to a far greater degree than was really the case when you were making that decision yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the same time, I'm sure you also see the peer pressure of things like, you know, all my friends are going to, you know, insert school here. So that's where I'm applying. You know, are there messages or anything else that you find resonates with them as they go through the college selection process?
Yeah, I think something that just, you know, based on feedback from students that works for me is something I call, you know, big fish in a small pond or small fish in a big pond, right? So I'll give you actually a real world example from a current senior. She is single digit ranked in a class of 500 and was accepted by some fabulous schools. But, you know, based on her family circumstances, did not qualify for need-based aid. And as amazing as she is, somehow, you know, did not qualify for any large merit aid. So we're talking, you know, $70,000 bills at three different well-known, you know, top tier institutions. She ultimately decided on the college she's going to enroll in because she's a rock star there, you know, still a very good college, right? And not only, you know, academically will she be a rock star, she's going to be given the opportunity to continue with not one, but two sports that she plays here in high school. And she qualified for essentially a full tuition scholarship. So I think she's down to room and board, which puts her, excuse me, less than in-state tuition here. Mm-hmm. So
it's fantastic.
It's a private institution, right? So, you know, and then I think it was 2013. I'm a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell. He did a Google Zeitgeist talk and, you know, kind of similarly saying, like, you should go somewhere where you're going to stand out. Go somewhere where you're going to be that bigger fish. So I try to tell students academically and financially, you know, you want to try to, you know, be realistic about who you are and what your strengths and weaknesses are. We all have them, right? because I think that can benefit them in both ways. You'll find a college that you are happy about just as an institution, and hopefully it won't break the bank. You know, but then, you know, if they don't want to get that far into it, you know, I do think for a lot of students nowadays, the college search is so overwhelming, and then talking about money makes it even scarier. So sometimes they just don't even know where to start. And I say, well, you know, we're lucky to live in a state with a lot of great options. I already mentioned Rutgers and the College of New Jersey. Another one around here is Rowan University. These are great options for kids to look at. And then, as I've said also, the community college. We're very lucky to have a great community college near here. So just trying to kind of, I guess, meet students where they're at, focus on their strengths and weaknesses, give them a little bit of insight. I mean, you know as well, you or I could host seminars for students and their families on how, you know, how college funding works. Your podcast 2 weeks ago with Lou from, was it Southern Connecticut, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
So insightful, you know, so helpful.
He's terrific.
And if they really want to learn, you know, the information is out there. But again, I think it gets to a point where it's just too much. It's like drinking out of a fire hose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I try to educate as well as guide, as well as counsel. You know, you wear all those hats. But I think students do resonate with just being, and it's hard, they're teenagers, right? But being comfortable with who you are and finding colleges. You know, that word fit is kind of like thrown out all over the place. But I really do think it matters academically and obviously financially as well.
Yeah. You know, the word I've been trying to use with students and families lately is relationships, not fit. Because mm-hmm. people go, oh, fit, what does that, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, I want to be in a big city. You're like, well, that's not really a fit issue.
right.
But, you know, the quality of your college experience, what it really comes down to is not the reputation of your college, not the location of your college, but the relationships that you form in your college mm-hmm. years, you know, with your fellow students, with your professors, with the other resources that were there, because those are the things that really get you sort of sucking the marrow out of the bones of college.
Yeah.
Which is really the best part. And so, you know, where are you going to be able to forge those relationships? And I know, like, my son is at a gigantic college.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of state. He knew two other people who were going there when he went. But he really took it upon himself to find the things there that were going to make it a small place for him. So, you know, he chose to live in the pre-business academic residential community. And the first 2 months of school, you know, every football game, their RA got them all organized and said, we're going at 5:30, we're meeting here, and we're all going over there. And mm-hmm. hey, and there's a picnic on Thursday, let's all go to the picnic.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, we're doing a pizza night with this professor, and he would go to the pizza night. And he just, you know, college is really a must be present to win situation. And
sure.
And so I think, you know, any environment you go in, you can figure out how to be present and how to win.
Yeah. Yeah. I have similar conversations here because my high school is 2,100 students. So they are looking, and, you know, sports are a big part of the culture here. So a lot of them are looking for that, and they're looking at, you know, Rutgers or Penn State or Maryland, these large public institutions with these, you know, great sports programs and a lot of campus culture. So then I end up having to have conversations out of necessity, especially for our more like high achieving students that want that, but also want the, you know, a community within a community. So now we're talking about like honors programs, right? Or honors learning communities, honors dorms, that sort of thing. It sounds like similar to what your son did. And you have to find a way to make this large school feel smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was a kid who he wanted to be at a big school, and he had a very limited budget because he wasn't a real ambitious high school student. So we told him we weren't going to be more ambitious college funders than he was an ambitious high school student.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he found his place and found it that way. I thought it was interesting, like, you know, because of who I am and the job I have, I talk to my kids about college, you know, paying for college, you know, from an early age. And my daughter was interested in private schools, and she knew what her budget was. And she would go and, you know, do the net price calculator and be like, well, that one's too high. And, but here's this other scholarship that I could probably get. I'm eligible for it. And if I got that, it would work. And so I will apply there. And this school's basically saying we get nothing. So I'm just not going to, you know, not going to apply there. And
I have to think that the net price calculator was one of the best inventions in my career in terms of, you know, talking about college finances. Just because before that existed, you'd get to now, you know, spring of senior year, and students would, you know, have fallen in love and applied to all the, you know, your daughter did that calculus ahead of time. But these, you know, but prior to the advent of the net price calculator, students would apply, get in, and then find out like, oh my gosh, there's no way on earth that we could make this work. And, you know, you might be left with very few, if any, options for college, you know, or you're now you're not going to the community college by choice. You're going out of lack of options, which is not an enviable situation. So, you know, I mean, I know they're not perfect and there's more that can be gleaned, but you know, that has been, I preach the net price calculator, that and like going on a college tour, which is such a shame for this current group of seniors who basically didn't get to do that. But you know, that, what a wonderful tool that's been.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been talking with John McMichael, a counselor at Cherokee High in New Jersey, about his own experience with student loans and how that gets him talking with families about them. John, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Anne, thank you so much for being here with you today. I mean, it's been a pleasure, and your podcast is great, so keep up the great work.
Well, thank you.